The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey guys, before we start the show, I just want to give a quick shout out to another podcast.
Hey, don't forget to check out the Pacific War podcast week by week in association with Kings and Generals. Hey, and don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button so I can feed my two feathery co-hosts.
You are listening to the Pacific War Channels podcast. If you wish to see the video version of these podcasts, go to the Pacific War Channel on YouTube.
Hello there. Welcome back to the Pacific War podcast. I am joined here by someone you might have never seen before, unless you saw our speakeasies once upon a time, my friend Ian.
Hi there.
Who I just realized didn't ask you if I should be using your real name or not in this podcast. So you will be doxxed by the Kings and Generals community. This is yet again a kind of pilot series that we're doing where we are simply doing podcasts on any given subject. And I chose to attack many of the questions that were launched at me by the Kings and Generals Discord community. So last episode was, what if Japan attacked the Soviet Union during Operation Barbarossa?
Shut the fuck up! Know your fucking place, trash!
Which kind of unanimously doesn't make sense, and it would go horribly either way. This is going to be another what if episode. This one is actually a bit of a two-parter. What if Pearl Harbor went much better, or what if it didn't happen at all?
I have to say this is very exciting because, like, I've been thinking about stuff like this for weeks now as I'm reading Shattered Sword, listening to Dan Carlin's podcast on the Pacific War, and just my thoughts are there. So when you asked me the other day, like, would you be interested in doing a podcast about, like, yes,
absolutely.
So thank you for having me here.
And for conclusion, as I said in the last podcast, we're going to try and keep it in parts. So first part, what actually happened? Why did it happen? Why did Pearl Harbor happen? Just in general. Second part, what do we think in this kind of alternate what-if scenario will happen? And in the end, like the third part, generally, how does history even look after whatever we've said, which is probably going to go down the rabbit hole? So,
a lot of hypotheticals, you know,
it's going to go around.
It's a very fun topic.
It's going to go fully down the rabbit hole. But here, I'll leave it to
whenever you deal with the hypotheticals, like, you have to.
I'll leave it to my guest. What do you know about Pearl Harbor? Why it happened? Anything you can say. Logistics, what, you know, damage.
I mean, popular consensus is the raid on Pearl Harbor was to deliver a knockout blow to the Americans early on, giving Japan, in Yamamoto's mind, 6 months free rein on the Pacific to shore up the defensive line in the Pacific, circle around the Home Islands, create that defensive barrier, separating the Home Islands from the Pacific itself and having room to move around and thus being able to focus on their expansion into Asia itself and get those key resources that we all know that they need.
Yeah, because that was, you know, the crux of it. How do you go into a place like the Dutch East Indies and take all those resources and get away with it? Well, you can't really. You have to neutralize any possible threats to this incursion. And that means Britain, and it does mean the United States. And
they hit the States first, like fleet-wise, they hit the Americans first at Pearl, but they also hit the British not long after.
It was actually simultaneous.
Yeah.
Technically hit Malaya first.
It was the 8th, I believe, that they took on.
Well, because there's a time zone difference, too, about 12 hours.
The Prince of Wales, or?
Oh, that's a bit after.
Okay.
Prince of Wales is a little bit.
I'm thinking about that first naval engagement where it was just pure aircraft taken down.
But that is the Prince of Wales. Yeah. The Prince of Wales got.
Yeah, that was Prince of Wales getting wrecked.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, I'll give the audience like a little bit of tidbit information maybe you didn't know. Well, there was a spy in Pearl Harbor, actually a few spies, but the main one, the kind of James Bond, if you will, was Takeo Yoshikawa. Yoshikawa, making sure. Yeah, that's the way you spell his name. I have notes here, people, because we need them sometimes. And he was reporting every single week, you know, what ships are in the docks, where are they docked, how are they docked. Like, for instance, you know, the battleships were actually positioned right beside each other. So whatever ship was inside, the Japanese are like, okay, we have to actually bomb that. The ship's on the outside. We have to torpedo that.
Just most importantly, are the carriers there? Because that's the information Yamamoto wanted.
And they weren't, and they knew it. When the operation was, you know, said, okay, yes, we're going, he told them, yeah, the carriers are gone. They go out on routine missions. That's what was going on. And he's like, okay, well, they've been gone for a while. And, you know, there's conspiracy theories out there where people are like, well, why weren't they there? More or less, they were doing routine operations.
Carriers operate at sea. It's a completely different game if carriers are doing like training in a harbor than if they're on the open ocean. Exactly. Because first of all, that carrier has to be moving.
Yeah, how are you going to do it in a harbor? Yeah,
because the pilots have to learn that if the like the wind patterns and if the carrier is running 30 knots, what does that do to the aircraft as you're trying to climb off? If you're doing that from the harbor, chances are a lot of those planes aren't going to be able to get off because they need that extra boost. And so, of course, that like they come into to harbor, get refueled, refitted with more supplies, give the pilots a day or two R&R.
Pretty much. And
it's not like a battleship where, I mean, you could still be running tests and that on in the harbor. You're like,
sure.
Maintaining the fundamentals of inside the craft. And that.
Also, you don't want to use fuel. Although the United States is not running low on fuel any which way. I mean,
for it's
the
very Japan, important that we start this podcast off with identifying the States as a juggernaut.
Yeah.
They are not short on supplies.
They're the ones providing the fuel to Japan that they just cut off, which is the reason for Pearl Harbor is because of the massive amounts of embargoes that FDR has put on, freezing Japanese assets, getting the Dutch to do the same thing to them, which was... I see what you did, FDR. Like, FDR was pushing
He was cloy.
He was pushing him to war. Like, not an argument. Like, that was the purpose of what
which
he was doing.
Which is ironic because his platform for getting elected that time was
publicly.
Publicly was no American boots will fight in this war.
Yeah. Just like the war in Iraq was to fund WMDs. That's me winking at the camera. But the objectives of Yamamoto's plan was, as Ian had already said, to prevent the U.S. Pacific Fleet for at least 6 months, you know, just bide that time so you can get all those resources. It's the whole Nanshinron strategy, go south and get everything. But other than that, you know, they have to build up a defensive barrier and all the territories they're taking. It's going to take a long time, and they don't do a outstanding job, I would say, in the time that they're given. And, you know, there's the underlying hope that after they do all this and they do such a striking blow that the Americans will, you know, go into a decisive naval battle with them at some point. And if the Japanese win that, which would have been something like Midway, had the Japanese won, then maybe the Americans will come to the peace table and negotiate. That's the thinking behind this whole thing, because no one was under the illusions that this juggernaut's going to be defeated. Perhaps
the Pacific is not worth it. Let's just focus on Europe.
And I guess I have to mention, so what actually happened at Pearl Harbor? 21 ships were, you know, damaged. Some of them were unsalvageable. All the battleships were knocked out for certain amounts of months of time. So it more or less, they completed their objectives spot on. The carriers were not really the objective. It was to hit the battleships because they had pretty terrible thinking.
It was to hit the surface.
Yeah. Because the thinking was still the old big guns club, like, oh, it's battleships that are going to make the world.
Everyone was still practicing the Mahan doctrine in this part of the world.
Yeah.
And it Yamamoto got the go-ahead to use his carriers, but no one had faith in it. Back in Japan, they didn't think he was gonna pull it off. Like, what was the chances of Pearl Harbor being a success? They said it was like 40%.
If you look at the amount of aircraft they lost, which in the first wave, they've hardly lost anything. They're like eight
planes. It was such a surprise.
Yeah. Second wave, they lose like 20 or something. I think it's like 29 aircraft they lose. And, you know, for someone like Nagumo's controlling operations, he's like, okay, they're alert. They're alert now. We don't know where the aircraft carriers are. They are most likely hunting us and such.
The anti-aircraft American submarines are in the area. Yeah. Of course, Americans have submarines around Pearl.
The anti-aircraft guns are now proving to be more effective.
The shore-based ones. Yeah.
They're waking up.
Yeah.
So
these are the big AA guns.
They're armed to the
40 millimeter flat guns.
Hawaii was armed to the teeth. They had 50,000 regular servicemen there. They had tank baton. They had everything that they needed in case of an invasion, which never is possible. It's impossible to invade Hawaii from Japan's point of view. Anyways.
So I guess in this hypothetical scenario, we would be saying they didn't wake up as quickly. The AA defenses of Pearl Harbor.
They do even better, even though they did really good. Like Japan did very, they were lucky. They're really lucky with the results that they got.
But they had planned another third strike, another fourth strike.
So that's
and in this hypothetical situation, that fourth strikes, they go off unimpeded.
Now that's the legendary, you know, this is what this whole question revolves around is, oh, what if the third strike happened in a group of yes? And a lot of people might be led to believe, as it has been believed by even a lot of historians, that it changes everything. I had to do a lot of research myself, and I was surprised to find out that more or less, if you were to put yourselves in Nagumo's shoes, having the hindsight, you might just quit and not do the third strike yourself because it actually was pretty impractical on a lot of levels. So famously, a third strike would knock out the fuel tanks.
That's the fuel. The other objectives of the raid on Pearl Harbor, not just the surface fleet, but it was the
repair docks, facilities, the oil tanks. Maybe you could hunt down the carriers.
The administration buildings, more of a secondary objective. Yeah. I guess that would fall in the fourth, but the repair facilities and the fuel tanks. That was
the most important thing that they could have hit that they wouldn't know to hit is the old administration building that held the crypto unit, you know, for the code breakers.
Which ultimately won the war in the Pacific.
Yeah, so you could argue, if they had that building, then they could really screw over Midway. Like, yeah, that's an alternate history question right there. But that wasn't their target. If they did go after anything, it'd be, you know, the fuel tanks. And, you know, Fuchida, that's what he was arguing. Oh, let's go hit the oil tanks. I looked it up and I was surprised to find out that these things were actually more robust than I knew. They're not going to be strafed down. They wouldn't cause a fire if you strafe them. They'd have to be bombed by light bombers because the Japanese don't have heavy bombers there. It's impossible. Yeah. It's not a Doolittle raid.
So it would be, they'd be limited to 500,000 pound bombs. Yeah.
And if you hit one and you're successful, which is actually going to be a little difficult, it's going to send such a cloud in the air that you won't be getting another shot down on any of the other ones.
At that point, you're hoping that it spreads.
And it wouldn't. I read from one guy in a military forum. He said that the fire control teams in Pearl were trained such a way, if one of these bad boys lit on fire, there was no way it was going to catch the other ones. And that's what really shocked me, because I thought this whole conversation would be third wave. It's a knockout blow. The Pacific Fleet's going to have to pull back to the coast, the United States.
Back and
like,
San Diego.
Yeah, this is really bad situation. But looking at it on paper, it's like, how much more damage could they have done to the ships? Because they're in a shallow dry dock. They're not sinking into the ocean. You really have to batter them to make them destroyed, quote unquote.
Yes, you lose a lot. Tragically, a lot of naval personnel.
Oh, everyone's dying.
Yeah.
It's going to be, I mean, the one ship. But
the hulks of the ships are still there.
Yeah. And it takes a lot. Like, these are light bombers. The Japanese, like, that has to be emphasized. You know, when the United States or Britain is doing their heavy bomb campaigns on Dresden or Tokyo, and that's a whole different scenario. You can smash a ship with those bombs.
Yeah.
But these are light bombers, torpedo bombers. Like, it's going to cripple and damage and maybe completely break one.
Unless you're hitting like an ammo storage or something.
You have
like
to get in lucky.
The case,
yeah.
Like in the case of the Arizona, there's no salvaging that. But others, like, yes, they capsize. But the hulks of the ships were still intact. And once you get them out of the water after months of repair and whatnot, you can, in theory, bring these ships back into service as they did.
As they did. Each a few months at a time, depending on the amount of damage.
And a lot of that operation being done at the Pearl repair facilities.
But, you know, for the argument's sake, we're going to go with the old traditional, and I'll even call it the turtle dove novelist look at this, where Pearl Harbor goes so well.
Yeah. The absolute best case scenario.
Magic.
How did the Japanese say it? You know, like the gods of the the rising sun are on their side.
Amaterasu is just like raining hell on the. I can't go as far as to say that all the ships are somehow completely destroyed. That doesn't make sense. Like they're not.
They already effectively did that.
They're wiped out for a year instead of 6 months.
In this scenario, they will come back unless those repair facilities are damaged or taken out of commission.
I even looked that up too. Apparently those things are they're steel structures. They won't be hit by the light bombs are going to crash and they can get repaired in a matter of days, if not weeks. So it's not going to work.
And if it's one thing the Americans proved this stage of the war is their repair crews are on point.
Yeah.
I just want to bring up, I know this is later on, but the
Yorktown
after Coral Magic, Sea goes to Pearl, they temporary fix it. And as they go into Midway, they have a few hundred repair guys, right? I call them repair guys, but engineers and that on the ship, still fixing it as the battle's going on, still fixing it, keeping it operational. Like this is the determination of the American Navy at the time.
And I'm already hearing the cries in the comment section. Look, you guys got to know one thing when we're saying all this, there's no magic here. I have to base this off realism. Are you going to say, they're going to invade the island? Like they can't invade the island. There's 50,000 regular troops in Hawaii. It's a pillbox of its own. The Japanese have all their divisions are caught up in the Nanshinran, plan in Malaya and the Philippines and such. So that's not happening.
Even the American paranoia of the Japanese descendants living on the island would rise up and conquer the island for them and take up arms against their American
fifth colonists are not going to win this either, even though it's like an 80% Japanese population, I guess.
Yes, but a majority of these families, like they've been there for a couple generations
and you've just attacked them and their businesses and the boats that they probably own in those private harbors. It's not gonna happen. But so anyways, we're gonna say that Pearl Harbor goes even more outstandingly, and let's say they even get let's say the Enterprise gets hit. Enterprise comes in because the third wave. Enterprise could have hit them.
That's another hypothetical. Like the Enterprise
gets knocked out.
Is in the area and he doesn't engage. There's still the Hornet out there. There's still the Lexington, the Yorktown.
Yeah. So let's say Pearl Harbor. They get a carrier. I can't give them more than one carrier because it's just so.
I know, but the first carrier for them to lose, EZE.
It's crushing.
But it doesn't have the reputation at this point.
It hasn't survived the entire war and become the most decorated ship in the U.S. naval history. But so we're going to say EZE gets hit. And I mean, that you get no better than that. How does this change greater scheme of things? It's 6 months. It's instead of 6 months, it's about a year.
But the only thing that I could see changing is Roosevelt's command to Nimitz when he arrived at Pearl, you get your carriers out into the Pacific and you don't come back until you have a victory. I mean, perhaps that would change because now all of a sudden
that's not looking too easy to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't easy with what they had. They were fighting, the Doolittle raid's not happening. Yeah, the Enterprise had to help. Yeah. They were escorting. So that Doolittle raid, I guess, wouldn't happen. And the psychological effect of the Doolittle raid.
Unless, desperation kicks in and they go ahead without it.
I mean, technically, they didn't need the Enterprise to launch the aircraft.
In hindsight, it didn't. It was smooth sailing to that point. And
that's
then
ballsy if they do that.
That's super ballsy.
They have no offensive.
But that is how desperate are they?
They're relying
on a public win.
Yeah, they're relying only on a screening force of destroyers. That would be terrifying.
It's terrifying. But in desperate times,
And I don't think the Saratoga couldn't possibly. It's not adequate.
Not fast enough. It's that's an old ship that's along the lines of the Lexington. Does not have the maneuverability, the speed.
Wasp is going to take a long time to get over and into the Pacific. I don't know if the total rate. I mean, yeah, maybe if they put the balls to the wall and they're going to do it sneaky sneak like they were and just hope to God they don't get attacked, which is risking it. I mean, they were risking both carriers, mind you, doing what they did.
I think it's too much of a stretch imagining that the Enterprise would be there.
Yeah.
For the third and the fourth.
It was close.
It was close.
They were hunting for them and they just didn't find them. They actually found American destroyers and attacked them slightly, thinking they were the Japanese, because reconnaissance is really, really woof for both sides, man. World War II reconnaissance planes in the Pacific, it's outstanding. The stories of like oil tankers being misidentified as carriers and stuff.
Absolutely. Well, because it's not like, you know, we're a little spoiled in, you know, the modern age here with their video games and that. And when you're playing an RTS as an example, like, okay, that guy's red, I'm blue, I know that's the enemy. It wasn't like that. The fog of war was real.
Yeah.
You had to have been able to identify that ship, and a lot of ships look alike.
I'm not going to lie, and I think the audience is already realizing this. The reason why I made this particular podcast like a two-questioner is because the idea that Pearl Harbor goes much better almost changes nothing. It really just prolongs all the same operations. Like, okay, maybe the little raid doesn't happen, but some kind of midway situation, because a decisive naval victory is only thing Yamamoto's thinking of after Pearl Harbor. He needs it. It's going to happen. It's going to look different. We don't know what time period is going to happen. The U.S. is going to have more carriers, though, because it's going to be longer in the future. So WASP might be there. Who knows? And maybe Guadalcanal, it's a few months later on than it happens.
I think ultimately the scenario would be just prolonged.
Yeah.
Like the same things would happen.
Only thing I can think to say is situations like the Battle of Coral Sea, that whole operation by the Japanese, they have even more time in this scenario. So they got an extra few months. Maybe they're going to get some of the stuff close to Australia. So it's going to get scarier. Yeah. Maybe actually, they get Ceylon.
Port Moresby. Yeah.
That's actually scary. It's going to threaten transport lines. But then again, when it came to merchant transport, Japanese were, sorry to say it, complete idiots. They didn't protect their own merchants or transports, and they didn't raid the Allies enough. They know what they're doing.
They honestly never thought about submarines. They had no...
No, they did. It's just they thought the submarine was an offensive weapon, and they used the submarines in naval, like in naval battles. Like
the submarines were used against other military vessels.
They had this, of all the things to have kind of like a samurai mentality about, it's weird to say, they thought it was like gross to attack merchant convoys, which is ironic since it's what defeated them. Basically, the American submarine force, when it pulls its shit together and fixes its torpedo issue,
strangle them,
just kills them. They can't transport any of the resources they get from the Dutch East Indies. So all the oil that they got, which they didn't really get much of because they didn't know how to get it out of the ground properly because everything was destroyed.
And if you have to have an escort, task force per convoy,
they didn't do it.
All of a sudden, you're losing resources in the Pacific to be fighting the main objective, like the main battle fleet of
Americans. We're talking about the same country that ended up using its destroyers to move its troops in the end.
Yeah.
Like they really did. Not that they didn't think of things, but they didn't have the resources necessary to do things adequately. That's the problem.
It's easy in hindsight to say, oh, well, that was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But like, this is an empire of limited resources and limited capabilities.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Yes, they had the most advanced navy of the world at the time, but they didn't have the capabilities of enhancing it, such as the Americans. The Americans, like, let's say the entire fleet is wiped out. They can start building a new one from scratch, and then they can build another one after that, another one after that. It's, they have that economic and they have the resources for it.
I saw
Japan cannot say the same.
One guy summarized it really well. At a point in 1943, they start pulling carriers out every 2 months, a carrier or something on average. That's ridiculous. They
look at 1945. How many carriers did the Americans? They're at like 60, 70 carriers.
By technicality, like there's fleet carriers, there's light carriers, escort carriers. Like, there's all types, but
they had almost 40 fleet carriers.
Yeah. And the Japanese, how many carriers did they put out by 45? Yeah, it's not looking good. I think they put out 11 or something.
End of the day, they were at like, I think, max number, and this is the total war combined, it was like the mid-teens. It was like 16, 17.
It wasn't looking
good. They were even like converting super battleships into carriers at that time, the Shinano.
So I think it's actually a little bit more boring to talk about, okay, Pearl Harbor goes so ecstatically great. Like, how does that change greater things?
What happens next?
So what's more interesting is the other question that, and this comes straight from the KNG Discord community who pelted me with this one. Well, what if Pearl Harbor just doesn't happen? And
oh, that's fascinating.
This one's tricky to do. It's a lot more scenarios.
Yeah.
And the first thing I asked the people asking me this question, I said, okay, but why aren't they attacking Pearl? What are they doing? And they, you know, they just said to me things like, oh, well, some of them said, well, they just focus on the Philippines, or no, they don't want to go to war with America. They're just going to go after the Dutch and the British to get the resources, because that's the goal. It's the resources. It's not that easy. There's a good reason why they raided Pearl Harbor, and there's a good reason why they attacked the Philippines. The Philippines is right on the front step of the mainland islands, and just because you say you're neutral against one of your worst rivals who doesn't like you doesn't mean they're not going to attack you the moment they have a chance, or at least hinder you in
how many airfields and operations from from the Philippines,
just the Philippines alone,
with long-range bombers,
these like flying fortresses are just like, oh, we're looking at Formosa over there, that's the Taiwan.
Well, the flying fortresses weren't in commission at that point, but they had long-range bombers, like high altitude bombers at the time.
They got their B-17s with Doofus MacArthur, who's if they don't attack the Philippines, then MacArthur can actually raise the army he wants to raise. So good for him. But this is the question I kind of want to answer, because so many people ask me this. I got to say, like, the scenario is hard to imagine that they don't attack Pearl Harbor.
You have to. It's because then you have the American surface fleet and the carrier fleet encroaching in as you're trying to take these key objectives for your resources. It would be like going after your main objective and then being hit in the back simultaneously. Like, that is, it's almost suicide.
All their plans of expansion
would crumble.
I even looked up, there's one guy who asked, I mean, it's actually pretty smart. It's a smart question. He said, what if they just performed a coup against the Dutch to get the oil? You know, a big reason that this all happened was at the last minute when they were trying to purchase oil from the Dutch said no, because the Americans had talked to them and said, no, we're going to have a unilateral, you, the Dutch, the British, and us, we are not giving them the war supplies they need for the war in China. I don't think a coup is going to work against the Dutch. Like, they're government in exile. They're only friends who they need to rely on to get them their country back from Germany. They have to play ball. And even if they're attacked by the Japanese, this is it's a very important amount of colonies with vast amounts of resources, but they're not going to throw away the chances of reclaiming their actual homeland.
That's their Alamo.
I mean, I had to really go through the ringer. As if the audience watched the other podcast, another possibility is, what if Japan attacks the Soviet Union? No, it's not happening. They have to attack Southeast Asia and the Dutch East Indies. They need those resources. Why they wouldn't attack Pearl Harbor? Let's say the only possible situation is they attack the Philippines and hunker down thinking they're going to do a decisive naval battle against the U.S. Pacific Fleet incoming. And that's going to be disastrous for both sides.
Completely different. Yeah. The only reason the Pacific turned into a carrier war is because the success of Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
The old school thought, the Mahan Doctrine, was big battleships win a naval war. And back home in Tokyo, everyone was telling Yamamoto, you're crazy. Carriers are not going to win this war. We have to go with the battleships. And at that point, without having Pearl Harbor a success for him, he would not have the reputation where he's able to pull off these carrier engagements such as Coral Sea, Midway, and really emphasize that carriers are our most
important
asset that we have in our Navy. He would have been forced to engage the incoming American fleet in old school naval warfare, big battleship versus big battleship, carriers as a support vessel. as was originally planned of what a carrier would do.
And can you imagine, like, I mean, it's cool to imagine, but the screening force of the destroyers on both sides, because both sides are throwing carriers, both sides throwing battleships and destroyers. The screening forces on both of these giant navies, I would not want to be a pilot in that. That's going to be a nightmare.
Yeah, these are ships at sea, not just battleships on their own without their escort vessels. This is a fully functional task force designed to counter incoming airwaves.
And don't get me wrong, the Japanese are winning.
They're going to win it,
yeah. But it's going to be...
They got the numbers. They got the superior vessels.
Yeah, it's a Pyrrhic victory. I mean, I don't know how much they're going to lose, but it's going to be awful.
But they're losing.
Yeah.
As opposed to Pearl Harbor, where they lost
29 aircraft. That's it, nothing. I mean, mind you, I guess the torpedoes from the American side are not going to help their cause.
They're going to do nothing. The Americans, their aircraft aren't even getting close to the,
you know what?
The Japanese force.
And I'm guilty. I didn't even mention this. It's not only the Americans. If the Americans are rallying to attack, the Dutch and the British are coming.
What was the name of that that force, the international force that Abdicom. They had? Yeah, that's it.
Dorman and Helswick from the Dutch and the British, Prince of Wales, Repulse is going to be there. Probably an aircraft carrier too, Illustrious. Yeah. I don't know. Someone in the Mediterranean would pop out. This would be so important if they were going to get together to fight the Japanese. A
much larger battle on...
It's maybe I take it back. The Japanese might not have a clean victory here. There's a potential loss
because they were able to deal with that force because they knocked out the Americans.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden that flank is secure. They don't have to worry about it for a few months. And then they were able to just roll up everything out.
And they can't, they actually can attack all the places they want to attack. If the American and all these fleets are coming at them, this is going to be a nightmare.
All of a sudden the Japs are looking here, there. Like where?
Like Malaya? Maybe you have your forces in Malaya, but you're not landing forces in other places. The Philippines is super dangerous because, okay, yes, the Philippines is being surrounded and you're invading right now, but the American Pacific Fleet, the British and the Dutch are going to consolidate and attack you while you're around the Philippines. That's not fun, especially with the Philippines. I mean, if it's not a complete disaster and their aircrafts are still up, oof, that's really bad for you guys. And whatever Australia is throwing in the mix, because Australia, they have so many ships actually they could throw at this. Yeah, it would be a nightmare. Another one people, say is, what if America remained neutral magically, which I don't think is a possibility.
No, eventually they would go to war.
It's too much happening
on, they're by the back door in the backyard. Like,
yeah, it's ridiculous. Okay. Like somehow, like people even said this in the Discord interview. Okay. Wait, they go around the Philippines intentionally and they only attack the Dutch and the British or just the Dutch, whatever you want. It's the same thing in the end. But then the Philippines is right there and the U.S. Pacific Fleet is in the Philippines, most likely right at your doorstep. Like you can't.
You have to remember the Japanese mentality at the time that they were bringing salvation to the Orient. That
they're not really, but
we will liberate.
They said that.
We will liberate. Dare I say the Asians from these Western invaders, these Western colonizers. You cannot leave Philippines in the hands of the Americans. That, like, even though that they're neutral, I mean, technically they weren't at war with anyone else, but they still ended up invading. There's no way the Japanese would abide with the Philippines remaining in American hands, not for long anyways.
I was going to bring this up at the very end of the podcast. I don't know if you know that one of my favorite YouTube channels is Alternate History Hub. And he touched the subject. He made an episode on what if Pearl Harbor never happened. And he had a unique take on it. And I mean, it's alternate history. It's going to be batshit crazy. But I'll offer this as another example of what we're talking about. If the United States, and I mean magically, remains neutral, like this is beyond magic, this doesn't stop the Lend-Lease program. And you might be saying, okay, but what about the Soviets getting, because, well, the Vladivostok, like, it's not going to be as easy. Maybe the Japanese attack Russia, blah, blah. No, the Russians are getting Lend-Lease through the Persian corridor and other places. All the materials are now super steroided because the United States is not using them themselves. Yeah. The United States is selling ships fully to Britain, to I don't think Russia would need them, to maybe Australia and stuff. Like, the United States is funding this entire war, and it's going to take longer for World War II. But as alternate history put it adequately, the Soviets are in an incredible position.
Yeah, probably like by that point, they're already getting ready to bounce back Barbarossa.
They're most likely, like, we're talking 1948, maybe World War II ends, and they've taken all of Germany instead of half of it. And then they sweep around and they attack all Japan's holdings in Asia, except for the main islands, of course, because there's no way they can actually attack the main islands. It would be incredible to think about that.
Yeah.
But they're strangling Japan from everything it has, and then Japan's going to capitulate, probably to the United States, and join the United States, and then we have a worse Cold War that might go hot, because there's going to be maybe nukes going after people. Who knows? It's worse. It's a worse world, actually, if you think about it. It's awful.
Yeah, absolutely. Because at that point, the Americans do not have their staging grounds in Europe, bolstering the Western powers.
No,
there's no bulwark there. It's Russia would have free reign of Europe.
And they'd have most of Asia, and Mao is probably even more prominent and bolstered by Stalin. So we're looking at a even stronger China that helps defeat the Japanese even more so. And there's a huge Soviet bloc that now is
They would be the ones leading the way. The Americans would never have caught up in military technological prowess as they do in World War II, creating that massive superpower that they were.
They don't have a reason to go crazy into production either, because they're not at war. They're going to be productive, but it's not like the 500% that we see. It's going to be a little different. In fact, when World War II ends, that's probably the wake-up call for America, when they see the Soviet Union where it is. And Americans
might be too late to catch up at that point.
It's scary. It's a scary idea. And then Americans are probably going to be in Japan helping what is potentially, they're looking across the sea over in all of Korea is taken by the Soviets, all of Vietnam. Like, maybe the Soviets stop in Malaysia, and maybe we see like a Korean style war against the British. It's a crazy idea.
Now we're dealing in crazy hypotheticals.
And Churchill would never let Stalin have Malaysia and Singapore. So it'd be worse. It would be a worse Korean War, that's for sure. And I don't know how much more we can say about that. Do you have any thoughts on more alternate history kind of stuff? If Pearl Harbor doesn't happen,
I think we covered most of it. It's like I'm getting to the point where, like, if Pearl Harbor didn't happen, like, and let's say there is a major naval engagement out in the sea, the rest of the naval war between the Americans and the Japanese would be fought in, like, in the beginning anyways, in the Mahan Doctrine, fleets against fleets.
It'd be cool to watch.
And like I said earlier, Yamamoto needed the success of Pearl Harbor to start doing the things he wanted to do and reorganizing the Navy in that way, where carriers are the weapon.
Well, actually, before Pearl Harbor and everything, he did get a nice bolster to his programs when he used carriers to hit China. They had limited engagements, especially like the Battle of Shanghai at the early stages. And he showed how successful carrier-borne aviation going into the mainland could be. But again, it's better to attack islands. Attacking the mainland of China, I mean, it was effective, but it's not crazy. It's not like Pearl Harbor was a big one, you know? The Battle of Taranto is a huge one, but he's not going to have the oomph that he has. And you know what? The IGA, they're going to get more funding than in our timeline, because they're going to argue, look at this stupid Navy. What are they doing? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
We get more money, please. And then, you know, Hideki Tojo is like, hey,
oil is better used for our tanks on the mainland.
And Hideki Tojo, I just thought of this. If there's no Pearl Harbor, hey, Yamamoto, do you want to come have dinner over in the mainland islands? And Yamamoto's like, oh, for some reason, says yes. And Hideki Tojo kills him.
Yeah,
because he can get away with it.
And now all of a sudden, Japan, because, you know, you had that diadem of between the army and the navy, and it was somewhat balanced, like a very shaky balance. But all of a sudden, it's the army, and there's no comparison.
Although they still need the resources.
The Navy needs a big victory to be in the game, in the war.
Yeah.
That's happening in Tokyo itself, the political game. It's
going to be so much worse. I mean, it's always cloak and daggers when it comes to the government of assassination, as they called it, but it's going to be even worse. If Yamamoto doesn't become the crowning prince he was, because his throat was going to get slit. He was sent out to sea on purpose by a higher up at one point because they knew they were going to kill him. It was the former commander of the combined fleet that sent him. Anyways, you know, yeah. But other than that, I mean, when you look at it and people are like, oh, you know, Japan lost the Pacific War the moment it started it. And it's true. But if you actually look at the options that they had, it wasn't so stupid, the things mm-hmm. that they did.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't have a lot of options. They needed the resources. And what's the most effective way to grab this? You got to knock out that over there on the other side of the ocean. And they did. And they were successful. Pearl Harbor was very successful.
If they wanted to expand, they had to knock out Pearl.
Yeah. The rest is history.
As they say.
And we are not about to simply, because of the logistics of this, just record the next podcast 10 minutes from now and leave all the same beer cans on the same table so people will notice.
Julian! I don't know where a fella could get a little drink around here, do you, bud?
But
no, it's good that we do the next podcast.
After this one. Actually, I didn't want it to be chronologically like this, but it's funny. The first one I did with Eric was, okay, what if Japan attacks Russia, which would have been 41. And then we have this Pearl Harbor one, which is 41. But the next podcast.
And the exciting one.
Is what if Japan won the Battle of Midway?
And we can't do that without this hypothetical of
Pretty Pearl much. Harbor. Pretty much. It actually goes hand in hand.
Because it's going to go hand in hand and we're going to see a whole different outcome.
And that one's going to be more rabbit hole. That's a lot more. But thank you so much for doing this podcast with me. And I will invite you, people watching the video while I'm doing the bunny ears here. I'll invite you to the next podcast that we're not recording right after this one.
Of course not.
Yeah.
Well, see everyone.
Stay classy, everybody.